Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk program, the place where we talk about everything climate and climate-related, always respectful. If you have comments on today's program or anything else related to the climate, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me by sending an email to John, that's J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. The CCL part stands for Citizens Climate Lobby. I am an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. You can check it out by doing a Google on Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a pretty great organization, nonpartisan, and lots of good information. Nothing like being fact-based, huh? So speaking of fact-based is sort of the opposite of being ideologically based, and we're living in a time where people tend to be driven by their ideology. Their conclusions and the decisions they make are driven by ideology. And I'll just say this is just as true of folks on the left of the political spectrum as it is on the right of the political spectrum. Of course, most folks who take on those stances claim to be fact-based, but the reality is when you poke in a little bit, not so much. I don't make any secret of the fact that I'm concerned about the climate and what the impacts are going to be on all of us. So in a certain sense, that makes me an environmentalist. Now, it's also clear that we're in this major argument, this conflict in our political system regarding the future of the climate, what's changing, if anything, and what we should do about it, if anything. Because we are in this conflict, a debate, if you'd like to call it that, proponents of either side tend to just put forward the stuff that supports their point of view and ignore or dismiss or disparage stuff that tends to detract from their point of view. Once again, there's not much difference in this practice from the left or the right of the political spectrum. Today, I'm going to be talking about what I'm going to call the dark side of green. I'm going to be talking about what some of the downsides are of green energy. And let's say we're just going to grab a hold of the topic and see where it leads us. One of the things that has triggered this line of thought for me is a movie just recently released by Michael Moore. The movie's entitled Planet of the Humans, and it's available for free on YouTube. It's about an hour and a half long movie, so it covers a lot of territory, and it talks essentially about what I'm talking about today, and that is what are some of the downsides of green energy and the green revolution, etc. So let's start right off by looking at what would be the core of a green energy future, things like solar panels, wind turbines, and electric storage batteries. All of these technologies degrade over time, usually after just a few decades. There are credible estimates that by 2050, there will be somewhere between 60 million and 70 million tons of used up photovoltaic cells. These PV panels, among other things, contain silicon, cobalt, silver, graphite, rare earths materials, as well as cadmium, which has been reported to leach out of the panels fairly easily over the life of the panels. It goes without saying that gathering all of the materials for these photovoltaic cells is going to require a massive amount of extraction from the earth, and that has its own environmental impacts. Now, of course, solar panels do have the possibility of being recycled, and really that's the very best solution, but let's take a look at that one for just a second here. Plastics can be used as an example. Plastic is recyclable to an extent. However, right now, only about 15% of the plastic that's produced in the world is actually recycled, and that plastic that is recycled can only be recycled seven or fewer times because it loses its qualities over time. So there's nothing nirvana-like about recycling. Recycling itself has its limitations and its downsides. One of the ugly downsides is related to the financial incentives. A lot of electronics is disposed of from the developed world by selling it as used material into third world countries where it is discarded, thrown away, returned to the environment in its toxic form. I live in the north end of Tacoma, an area that was affected by the pollutants coming out of the Azarco refinery, mostly in the form of copper and arsenic. The firm that produced all of that pollutant is long gone, but the pollutants are still here. There are financial incentives for industry business to avoid the cost of dealing with the leftovers once the production phase is complete. And while it's fine to point our finger at industry, the political system isn't much better. What we should possibly be doing is putting a fee on green energy related stuff that's going to have to be recycled downstream, a fee that will cover the costs of recycling. But most people would prefer to kick the can down the road rather than cover the costs of something that's far in the future, like recycling solar panels. Of course, there is value in recycled materials, but the reality appears to be for solar panels, as with so many other things, that the cost of recycling is more than the value of the materials that are recovered. We are bumping into that right now with our ordinary recycles of glass, paper, cardboard, etc., where we can't find anybody to take the recyclable materials because there's no money to be made from recycling them. Recycling ultimately becomes a political, not an economic problem, and there is a big question: do we have the political will to carefully and appropriately manage that kind of recycling? Looking once again at the recycling of electronic waste right now, according to the United Nations Environment Program, somewhere between 60 and 90% of electronic waste is being illegally traded and dumped in poor nations. All of these considerations also apply to wind turbines, although in a significantly lesser scale. So yes, absolutely, we must recycle, but let's not pretend that recycling is a placebo that will answer all concerns. The way we're doing things right now, almost all solar panels end up in the landfill. So this commentary wouldn't be complete if I didn't bring up the subject of greenwashing. Greenwashing is a practice whereby industry, usually in the form of large corporations, takes on the appearance of being concerned about the environment when actually what they're concerned about is just simple economic success. One of the things that is true about corporations, their number one goal is to stay in business, and to do that, they have to make a profit. And generally speaking, absent regulation, everything else goes by the wayside in the pursuit of that profit. One of the things that corporations have mastered for the most part is spin, public relations, communication. I do think there are some corporations who are good citizens, but it's incumbent on us to be very careful what we believe from the corporations. We have to do, with this as with everything else, our homework. I started off today's commentary by talking about ideology and how environmentalists are just as subject to being ideologically biased as anybody else. One of the places I believe that ideological bias has shown up is in nuclear power. And full disclosure, I'll include myself in that group. I would say that for many years, I simply dismissed nuclear as a possible power source in our future, thinking of things like Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima. But as I have looked more closely, it becomes clearer and clearer that nuclear power can be a safe source of reliable and continuous energy, and that the barriers to nuclear energy are really political and ideological, not science or safety-based. Let's just take a quick look at one simple thing, and that's France. France gets over 70% of their electrical energy from nuclear power. They've been doing that for a long, long time, and they've been doing it safely and efficiently, and that is with essentially traditional nuclear power plants. Now, here's the distinction I'm making regarding traditional nuclear power plants. Technology has changed over time, and it's really been 30 or 40 years since any advances have been made in actual nuclear power plants. The power plants that we have operating in the United States right now, the nuclear power plants, are using the technology that was developed in the 60s or 70s. The science and technology of nuclear power has advanced geometrically, although unfortunately, the applications of those advances have not shown up in the same kind of way. One of the things I often say is that if we really care about the future, and I believe we do, we have to do our homework. Homework is one way of escaping ideology by digging in and finding out what is truer and what's less true. So that applies right here too. So I'm encouraging you to get out your Google and look up a couple things related to nuclear power. One is the traveling wave reactor. Another is thorium-based nuclear power. Both of these technologies address many, if not all, of the concerns about traditional nuclear power. Things like weaponization of the materials used for the power, disposal of waste, etc. These areas offer such high promise of non-CO2 polluting energy that's produced safely and efficiently that I'm going to devote a future program to talking about them. Once again, that's traveling wave reactor, often just abbreviated as TWR, and thorium-based nuclear power. Take a look. So back to where we started a little bit today, and that is with Michael Moore's movie, Planet of the Humans. I do encourage you to watch it, and I encourage you to watch it in a special kind of way. My belief is that most people that listen to this program are concerned about the future of the climate, and they are proponents of clean energy, and as such, this movie is guaranteed to rub them, and me, I would say, possibly in the wrong direction. So I could watch this movie constantly rebutting and answering what grinds against my preconceptions or my ideology, but I'm encouraging you to not do that, to listen to the movie, to watch the movie, while asking yourself, what could possibly be true about what's being said here? I think by taking this approach to the movie and to other concerns about clean energy actually moves the cause forward. People who may be fence-sitters or skeptics will be impressed that we, as advocates for a carbon-free future, are willing to look at the downsides of some of the proposals and to address those or to realize that they can't be addressed. One of the realities of our post-industrial revolution economic system is that our human activity creates waste. Every item that we purchase in one way or the other goes back into the environment, often in a much more concentrated form than when it came out of the environment, and as such, it's toxic. One of the messages of Michael Moore's movie, I believe, is that simply transitioning to a green energy system is not going to be the solution to everything. We are going to have to change our values, and we're going to have to change our economic practices. So that's it for today. Once again, I would like to hear from you, john@ccltacoma.org. And for now, reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.